Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent.
At around 1:30 in the morning on Tuesday, the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed in Baltimore after a massive cargo ship lost power and rammed into it. Nearly 48 hours later, as of this recording, six of the workers on that bridge are still missing. Who were these workers? They all appear to have been immigrants from Central America and Mexico, but as of now, little is known about them. This tragedy tells a larger story about the plight of immigrant workers in America and our collective treatment of them, which is often pretty terrible. Here to discuss this today is Maximilian Alvarez, editor-in-chief of the Real News Network, which is based in Baltimore. Max has been working the story pretty hard. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So these workers were filling potholes on the bridge. The Coast Guard has ended its search, presuming that six of those workers are dead and they may never be found. Two others were rescued. You've been trying to figure out more about the missing workers, right?
I have. And even from, you know, the initial reports, I had a lot of questions, right? But I think that it's really telling, you know, the kinds of questions people ask, depending on who they know and what they know, right? I mean, because I watched white anchors here in the city talking about the fact that eight, you know, workers went down into the water when the bridge collapsed that we know of. Two of them were recovered from the water, one of whom was sent to emergency care, and one who reportedly refused emergency care. Now, that's all the detail we got based on the interaction that happened that morning. But I was watching these anchors and journalists in the city, none of whom spoke Spanish, none of whom clearly have, you know, close connections to construction workers or undocumented immigrants, suggest you know, credulously that, oh, perhaps the second person was just fine and walked away. That may be the case, but again, if you know undocumented folks, your immediate thought is that person was undocumented, and I can only imagine what was going through their mind when, after this catastrophic collapse of an iconic bridge, one of the greatest accidents that we've had in this country, to refuse medical service. Like, I'm not saying that is what happened, but I'm saying based on the crew that we know was on there and based on everything we know about how undocumented workers have to live and operate in this country, under the floorboards of society, as it were, it is very possible that that was the case of the second worker who was pulled from the water that morning. But what we do know so far is that six workers who were on that night crew who were filling potholes on the Key Bridge in the middle of the night. Their night shifts, I believe, go from 9 at night to 5 in the morning, according to Jesus Campos, a fellow co-worker of that crew whom I interviewed for the Real News Network. What we know is that they were there filling potholes at a time of low traffic. They were working for, you know, a long time, long established contractor in the city named Bronner Builders. So far, you know, the majority of reports that I've heard from workers in the city and folks who work construction is that Bronner has a relatively solid reputation. But they are, you know, contractors with the government. I think that there is another story here that, you know, this is what contracting and subcontracting everything looks like over the course of 40 plus years of sort of neoliberal politics, outsourcing government functions and government workers to the quote unquote market. Now, I'm not saying that's always a bad thing, but I am saying that I think you can find in that historical progression an understanding of why and how we ended up in a situation where workers doing this vital and manifestly potentially dangerous work in the middle of the night on a bridge with these mega ships passing beneath their feet could somehow be doing that work with no direct line to emergency dispatch services, which is why, based on everything that I have heard, everything that I've seen, my review of the police scanner reports, the workers on that bridge had no idea that they were about to meet their deaths. The police who responded to the call and who stopped traffic from getting onto the bridge, and credit to them, they did save lives. But you can hear the police talking into the scanner saying that they were waiting for backup so that one officer could go onto the bridge, tell the foreman, and you can hear the desperation in like one of the voices on that dispatch call saying, is someone going to tell the workers? And then no one did. And now six of them are missing. And at this point on Wednesday, they are presumed dead.
You mentioned talking to Jesus Campos, who, again, is an employee of the contractor Bronner Builders. He has said the missing men are from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico. They're in their 30s and 40s and have wives and children. I think that New York Times and maybe some others confirmed that one is from El Salvador and two more are from Guatemala. Do we know any more about their identities?
So far, it seems that we have confirmation on, I believe, the identities of three of the workers. Now, I want to do more digging myself into this, but I've been running around ragged the past 24 hours. But what I've been seeing are efforts from, you know, like the consulates in Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico, I'm not sure about El Salvador, have been working to verify the identities of the missing men. And even my foster daughter, who herself is undocumented and from Honduras, like she was showing me this morning posts from her friends in Honduras, like trying to find out who these workers are. What we currently know right now is that they hail from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Mexico. According to Jesus, they were middle-aged men in their late 30s and early 40s. They were hardworking men. They were, according to him, quote, humble men who were there, you know, like all of us, working for a paycheck, trying to make a better life for themselves and their families. And now those families will never be whole again.
Has the company said who the workers are? I was talking to another reporter in Baltimore, and it seems that people are still racing to nail down even the most basic facts about these men. I mean, these were immigrant workers doing awful hours and night shifts, working grueling jobs, making it possible to repair the bridge while the rest of us sleep. And it occurs to me that the very fact that it's so hard to put together basic information about them itself kind of captures their invisibility.
Right now, Donald Trump running for re-election is out there vilifying, demonizing people who look like me, people who look like Jesus, people who look like the men on that bridge, people who look like my foster daughter and her friends as, you know, subhuman people, criminals coming in to destroy this country. And yet here we have a clear cut example of what we're actually doing in this country. It's like, we're not ruining it. We're trying to make a life for ourselves like everybody else. And I'm not even going to get into all the particular reasons that migrants, particularly from places like Central America, where the U.S. has been, you know, waging CIA-backed coups, you know, like backing dictators, ousting democratically elected presidents, yada, 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 fomenting drug wars. Like, the U.S. has a very heavy hand in creating the quote-unquote migrant crisis that we like to complain about every election year. But we can set that aside for now. The point being is that at the same moment that you have a ravenous right wing in this country, you know, fascistically demonizing and dehumanizing, you know, people like the workers on this bridge, This is not anything new, but it does show like just how ignorant we actually are about, the kind of lives that people in this position live and the ways that our economy is built to exploit them.
It's hard to overstate how in this area, in the DMV area, meaning DC, Maryland, and Virginia, it's hard to overstate how important immigrants are to our collective well-being here. Aaron Reichland Melnick, who's a great immigration analyst, pointed out that an enormous number of people from El Salvador are doing construction in this area. They're literally building this region and driving its growth. And that's true in many other areas. And stories like this one kind of open a window on that. But the weird thing is that the window remains open very briefly, and then it just closes again.
Right. I mean, I think that's what happens when you live, not to get all lefty meta on you, but I come to this conclusion from experience, from interviewing the victims of capitalism, the victims of this exploitative economy, the people who are bearing the scars of an economy that treats and sees most of us as nothing more but disposable meat bags whose bodies are the proverbial grist for the mill to be ground down and discarded when we have nothing left to give. This is the state of most workers in this country. And that goes double for workers in dangerous industries where there is a lot of rampant contracting, subcontracting, the exploitation of that relationship. It's because of the contractor-contractee relationship that you can have situations like the Hyundai parts supplier in Alabama, where migrant children were found to be working and supplying parts for Hyundai. And Hyundai could still turn around and say, well, that's not us. That's one of our contractors. So we're not responsible. That's how they do it. But like, if you magnify that out across the country, that's how you end up with migrant farm workers right now in the year of our Lord 2024, working in this country in slave-like conditions in places like Florida to pick the tomatoes that go on the Wendy's cheeseburgers that we eat, to say nothing of, you know, the workers who are doing construction outside, who are dying of heat stroke in places like Texas at the same time that Governor Greg Abbott and the Republicans are stripping mandated water breaks for outdoor workers. This is something we've also been reporting on at the Real News Network. Like, this is what happens when you have a culture that just like devalues life, devalues labor, devalues the people who do these essential jobs and make our economy run. So not only are migrant workers, you know, like doing a lot of hard, thankless jobs that we depend on, but they are dying doing it. And construction is one of the places where that happens.
We seem to have a kind of schizophrenic attitude towards immigrant workers. During the pandemic, we relied on them heavily to keep our society going during the lockdown, and we honored them by calling them essential workers. But that's all faded, and we're back in a place where Trump and his movement are demonizing migrants as a threat to Americans' livelihoods and worse. I don't understand why we as a society and why more public officials aren't standing up and saying, we relied on immigrant workers when the chips were really down. Let's do right by them now. This story right now that we're seeing unfold in Baltimore, even though we don't know a lot about who these workers are, it just sort of opens a window on that for me.
Oh, I think that's right on, brother. I mean, like, and this is why my first book was a collection of interviews with workers during year one of COVID, because I could already see, right, in that first year, how quickly we were allowing ourselves to forget the things that had horrified us just weeks prior. And we were already being conditioned to accept what was so unacceptable to us at the beginning of the pandemic. Let's not forget the Amazon Labor Union drive began when Chris Smalls led a walkout over COVID safety policies a couple years ago. Let's not forget all the people who died needlessly because they were not provided with the proper PPE. They were not given proper time to quarantine and rest. They did not have sick time to take, so they went to work sick, got other people sick. And now we've essentially ended up 4 years later in a situation where the bosses won the COVID war, as it were, and workers lost.
Let's return to the workers on the bridge to close this out. Some of them had families back at home that they were supporting, right? Do we know any more about that? I mean, where are we at this point? Are you going to keep reporting on this and trying to figure out as much as possible about them?
We're going to be talking to the people who work and know intimately the ins and outs of a busy port like this, because there are so many questions that still need to be answered, right? Like, again, the most obvious and damning of which is, like, how the heck could it be possible that these workers working on that bridge in the middle of the night with these ships passing under their feet had no direct line to emergency dispatch in case something like this happened? And how the heck was a ship that was that large in that congested of an area experiencing that level of critical electrical failure 30 minutes after leaving port? How was it allowed to leave port in the first place, right? This is the same question that I have asked and that residents of East Palestine have asked about the fact that the Norfolk Southern train derailed, you know, like in their town a year ago, and everyone was talking about, well, it was a faulty bearing, that's why it crashed. Just like we're saying, well, it was an electrical failure, that's why this boat crashed into the pylon. But the question that workers in these industries will prompt you to ask is, how is it possible that a train like the Norfolk Southern train that's that long with that many chemicals on it was allowed to be on the tracks with a faulty bearing in the first place?
Any closing thoughts on those six workers on the bridge?
I mean, I get really emotional thinking about it. I plead to people out there. We're not your enemy. Like, we migrants are not coming to this country to ruin it. Migrants have made this country what it is. We are all in pursuit of a better life for our families, for ourselves, for a future, a life with dignity and comfort, a life where we can sit on our porch and look at the sunset and think about, you know, what dreams may come. These men dream that too. They are just as human as you or I. Please don't forget that. Don't forget these men. And when I promise everyone listening that as I find out more about them, we will let you all know. We're going to keep reporting on it. We're going to share any info we have about fundraising efforts, anything like that. There's a lot more to come. This story's not done.
Maximilian Alvarez, thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for covering this.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.